Hey, we're Toucher and Rich. Brad Stevens is the president of basketball operations for that team that just won last night, the Celtics. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Hello, Mr. Brad Stevens.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. I went to the game the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. The Nets game. And I went with my father, who has not watched the NBA in a very long time. And he was, you know, marveling at the style of play in the NBA, which got me thinking. As a coach, as you're obviously like a basketball nerd, you're like obsessed with basketball. But as a coach, honestly, is it more fun to coach collegiately from a strategic standpoint or in the NBA?
Oh, strategically. No question in the NBA because of the talent, the level that these guys can, you know, impose their will on a game and make it difficult. Like when you play, you bring up the Nets, when you play those guys, you can't give those guys one look and expect them not to figure it out in about 4 minutes, right? Like, you have to keep them off balance, and then they still may score. They're so special. And so I think that when you're talking about guys like Durant and Harden, and but strategically you get into the playoffs, you get into, you know, the fourth quarter of these games and sometimes the halftime of these games, and the strategic stuff is fun. That is a, you know, I've been asked a lot, what do you miss about coaching through my first part of a season when I'm not coaching? And it's the two things are the teaching aspect and just the in-game strategy. I think that's a lot of fun. And so I would say the NBA has that a little bit above college because of the talent and because you play so many games, you get used to making in-game adjustments. Whereas in college, you go, you know, a lot of times in college, we'd have 4 or 5 days to prepare for a game. And, you know, whatever you're planning on doing, you can really stifle the opponent and take away what they want. And usually you don't do a lot of changing in the middle of the game. Usually you've got a lot more, you know, if you've got a good plan, it usually sticks for the 40 minutes. In the NBA, you got a good plan, you may have to tweak it at halftime.
When you were coaching in college,
they're good.
You know, because you coached at Butler, obviously, and had a ton of success, and that's obviously not a perennial power. Did you ever go up against, like, these quote-unquote legendary coaches, and you were kind of like, this is not impressing me very much?
Well, let me first of all say I've learned something from every coach I've coached against. It's funny, when you get into coaching, you look at it so different because you're looking at defensive rotations, you're looking at plays, you're looking at angles of screens, you're looking at, you know, how people rotate and sub and how they try to gain a couple minute advantage with their subs. So like every single game I've ever coached against anybody, I've taken something away from it. And I think the way that I would probably phrase this is there are a lot of coaches no one ever talks about that are pretty anonymous.
Yeah.
That are ridiculously good.
And they just have the talent.
I think that obviously, or maybe they're just at a small school.
Yeah, right.
You know, maybe they're like, I always thought, you know, there were some unbelievable NAIA coaches and Division III coaches in the state of Indiana that I would meet with all the time and take more from those meetings than a lot. So I just think there's a lot of good coaches around, but most of the people that have the reputation they have it for a reason and, you know, are really, really good. But I got a chance to coach against a lot of them in college, and it was fun. And then you get to the pros, and, you know, the level of coaching is really good.
How good are you right now, like on a basketball court? Like if you had to actually play, what level do you think? Because I know, obviously, DePaul, like, do you
half court.
Half court.
Yeah. You used to play in the pickup games with Scal, who took it way too seriously.
Oh, Scal's intense, though, right?
So my full court days stopped Yeah, within the I've played one time full court in the last year, and I can feel, I don't know how you guys feel, but I can feel my hamstrings and calves like a moment away from being a terrible month.
Yeah. So I just, but see, my lungs give. I have the advantage of my lungs giving out first. Yeah. So my lungs say, "You're done."
Up and down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the back and forth, the like changing speed, which my change of speeds are slow to slower, but like it's. You know, it's not for me anymore. But I do play in the half court, and I'll do like 3-on-3 with some of the coaches or with some of the front office. Or I love playing with my son and his buddies in the summer. But I don't run up and down anymore. Those days are behind. But I like to play. It's fun. I really miss not being able to be out there a couple of times a week playing 5-on-5 up and down. You know, that was a good way to get exercise. A lot more fun than a treadmill.
It's so much different than a treadmill. You can run all day on a treadmill. You get on a basketball court, like you said, changing direction and having to sprint. It's crazy. Can your son beat you 1-on-1?
Yeah, he's had me about 95% of the time since probably the pandemic started. We have a goal in our driveway, and so, you know, that was, you know, as you all know, everybody was homebound. And so we were literally out there every single day. And I thought he went from, you know, I could beat him maybe 30% of the time to it was about 95% for him by the end of it. And now I can't. He's too big and too strong for me, which I hate saying.
I can't keep up.
To public.
I can't keep up. It's like I'll dominate him at first, and then I'll run out of energy. And if the kid can hit anything from the outside, I'm screwed.
Well, that's the thing. You don't want to chase out there and contest.
Yes,
either.
Exactly.
Yes.
This is embarrassing. A couple of years ago, I was playing him 1-on-1 in September, right before the season started, and you know he was getting bigger and stronger, but I couldn't. You know, he's taller than me now, and he's waves. You know, he's just strong for a young kid. But, yeah, I could kind of tell he's getting bigger and stronger, but I didn't think anything of it. I felt like I could still, like, chest him up and, you know, keep him out of the paint and make it tough to score. Well, he put his shoulder down on one play, and he brought his elbow up through my chest, and he actually broke my ribs.
Oh, wow. Did you get pissed?
It was right before. I just was like, I heard it. And so I was like, oh, my God. First of all, it's like I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No.
You struggle to breathe. It's like brutal. There's nothing you can do about it. So the next day I walk in here and we're like doing like just small group workouts that are voluntary in the preseason. And Ojale's coming down the lane. And, you know, I'm like in and out a little bit, but totally like staying away from contact. And, I mean, I ran off that court so fast. If Ojale hits me right now after that happened,
he'll explode. He'll kill you.
I walked upstairs. I told Danny he was killing me for like 3 weeks about it. And so I didn't get back out on the court for a little bit. So that was a little bit of an eye opener for me.
What did the players say when they found out it was your son who broke your ribs? Did any of your players say anything?
They probably will find out via, you know, somebody telling them from this interview.
You never let the
Did you get
back.
Pissed at your kid? Because there is that thing.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
It's like, hey, my 14-year-old drilled me.
Yeah, but if your 14-year-old breaks your ribs, there is that moment that someone has just broken your ribs, regardless if they're
you
blood
see
or
red,
not.
Yeah.
You got to see, were you like, Jesus, kid, like, what the hell are you doing?
No, it's like, I walked in and I was like, Tracy, I think he broke my ribs, which is like awful, but. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, in retrospect,
it's not so cool 3 weeks later when it hasn't healed.
No.
I understand what Brad's saying.
I understand what Brad's saying, too, but that's with hindsight.
Yeah.
Danny's line was, and you guys, I'm sure you will appreciate this, he goes, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, that's not awesome. It doesn't feel good. But anyway.
Well, Ainge's got 7,000 relatives. You know, they're all beating the crap out of each other. And, like, you know, that's just par for the course of the Ainge household.
Yeah. So, that's good. But, and you know, listen, maybe you can, did Danny immediately say, all right, I need to start scouting this kid? He's obviously got a little something at this age.
No. Danny is, we laughed about it, but I certainly have lessened my time trying to hold my ground or chest up a driver, maybe like I did in my 20s and 30s.
Awesome. Well, listen, this has been an interesting few weeks for the Celtics. They after Marcus Smart calls them out, I know we talked to you about that, things seem to be going in the right direction. And all of a sudden, this team is playing the best defense that we've seen them play in a long time. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Brad, this is probably exactly the way you would hoped and envisioned that they would play defense. They had a couple of off games. I wouldn't call the Nets game an off game. The Nets are a juggernaut. But, you know, San Antonio, obviously not a great one. And then last night, I loved what I saw out of that team as far as how they were able to, especially Horford, Rob Williams, they were able to lock down. What, just basically, for like dumb laymans like us, what do you think was the major shift? What made them go from being a team that anyone could score on to being one of the better defenses in the league?
Well, first of all, I'm encouraged. I actually was disappointed with our Nets game. I didn't think we played well. And even last night, I didn't think we played very well. But we did play hard defensively. And, you know, we talked a few weeks ago that if we were going to win, our identity had to become that. We have to be an every night defensive team. And I think that was, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. But I think the players have done a really good job of embracing that. We have not shot, you know, we don't have like a top three shooting team in the league by any means, but we also haven't shot even close to our averages individually for the most part on our team. So I still feel like we haven't played great yet. And that's okay, because you're building an identity around doing really hard things together, and that's being a good defensive team. And our players embrace that. I think they realized, probably even more so after a couple of games early in the season, that that's got to be our calling card. And I think our coaches have done a good job of, you know, I think we were quick to tweak, you know, from a structural standpoint, from a system standpoint. And I think sometimes, you know, people hold on to things too long. And I think that Ime and his staff did a good job of, you know, they put in a lot of different switching and rotating and covering for each other early, and then went with a few more traditional coverages as options. And now they've got them all as options. And so now, like, what you try to do and you try to build through the early part of the season, as you move through the season and hopefully you get a chance to play in the postseason, is you want to have a bunch of different ways to do it. And the one thing I feel really comfortable with this team, when engaged, we are going to be really hard to score on. Well, now we got to get better in a lot of ways, and we're not. And like I said, I don't think we've played great yet. And that's, I guess, the encouraging part from my standpoint.
And you talked about the scoring. You know, it hasn't been where you want it to be. And really, to be quite honest, it's been such a roller coaster year with Jason Tatum when it comes to his scoring. And, you know, obviously this guy needs to be the guy. We know this. Jason Tatum is, you know, that's the promise of Jason Tatum, is that he's going to consistently every night be one of the best scorers on the team. What do you think, or how do you explain his on and off again, back and forth relationship with, you know, scoring points?
Well, I think I told you guys this last time. In 22 games in, I still haven't lost one moment of sleep about Jason Tatum finding the bottom of the net.
But have you seen anything? I'm sorry to interrupt, but is there anything specifically that you see that might be some sort of key? Because when it's off, it's wildly off. And when it's on, as you said last night in the last quarter, you know, he was great. Like, is there anything specific that you notice?
Well, first of all, he's a guy that plays every single game, right? And so the burden of that with, you know, when guys are in and out of the lineup, it's not their fault they're in and out of the lineup. We've been hit with sickness. We've been hit with COVID. Jaylen's hamstring obviously has kept him out of 10 games already. But Jason has a huge burden. And Jason's burden is not only, you know, the minutes that he's carrying, but also he, on every single possession, is seeing the best defender on the other team. I mean, the early third quarter substitution when Jason found the bottom of the net early was Thibel, and it was quick to come off the bench last night because, you know, Doc didn't want to play another possession without Thibault on him. And I think that those are the types of things that, you know, when you are progressing and advancing from, you know, really good young player to, you know, borderline all-star to all-star to, you know, all NBA and above, those are all the things that you see on a nightly basis. And everything else that he's doing, I think, has grown. And, you know, he's not the only one that has struggled to find the net for us at their average level, right? And so that's one of the things that I think is pretty encouraging about our group right now. But he is doing a lot of other things. Like last night, he rebounded the heck out of the ball. I thought at the end of the Toronto game, he had the ball in his hands the whole time. And he was just making the right plays over and over and over. And that's part of, you know, what he has to be for us. There's so few guys in this league that can be good and be a jack of all trades. Like, they can do it all.
Yeah.
And the reason most of the guys that try it don't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
That most of the guys figure out that I got one thing I can do really well, and I'm just going to stick with that and do it. Right. Or I've got three things I can do really well, and I'm not going to try to be anything else. But he's got to do it all.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of it. But, you know, he would be the first to tell you that he hasn't, you know, he's still finding his footing in a lot of ways. But here's a guy that, you know, has played three seasons pretty compact. He went to the Olympics. He's played in every game. He's leading us in minutes. Like, he's out there and you know, he'll find his footing. He'll find his rhythm. I'm not worried about that. And I think our team, you know, I think there are several other guys that will too. I think Marcus's last couple weeks, he's looked a lot more like himself than he did early on. Like, I'm encouraged by how those guys are playing. But this stretch is going to be, guys, this stretch is going to be real from the standpoint of we're going to find out a lot more about ourselves in the next, you know, the next month or so. This December stretch is no joke.
What did you make of that ESPN report that came out where they quoted what they said was an Eastern Conference assistant coach about Jason Tatum, where they said, I don't think he cares about winning now, and if he does, it's on his own terms. He doesn't want to score 15 and win. He wants to score 39 and win. What did you make of that report that came out, basically calling him selfish?
Well, first of all, I have an own rule. Like, if you can't put your name on it, don't say it, right? So, like, there's no way that assistant coach would put his name on that quote. Whoa. Because, first of all, he obviously has never been around Jason. And secondly, Jason would kill him every time he played him for the rest of the
year. Right. Yeah, right.
That's the way those guys. That's the way those guys in this league are wired. Like, you piss off a really, really good player, and you know, it comes back to haunt you. I thought that was one of the, you know, I think the anonymous sourcing, and I understand why you have to write it, and I understand, you know, that's part of it, is telling stories. And sometimes people don't want to put their name on it. But I take it with such a little grain of salt. Like, it's such, to me, that line was a joke, because I'm around him every day. And again, you look at him, he plays, he's available, he competes, he's got a lot on his plate. He's done a lot more in his first 5 years in the league than most of the league, right? And so, you know, totally, totally wrong in that guy's assessment.
Well, to your point, Tatum took it seriously. Last night after the game,
he mentioned it to the media.
He mentioned that. And what's kind of weird, Brad, is take a look at what's happened over the last couple of games. You had Jason Tatum set his career record for assists, which I think might have been almost a response to that. Yeah. And then last night he set his record. But he mentioned it. The reason I say
that was a response to Toronto doubling and over helping at the rim. You know,
like, Fair enough.
But he did take that. Like, that's something that did affect him because he mentioned it. You know?
Yeah, no, I thought that quote was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is, to be honest. And I don't ever react to that stuff. And I actually sent a note to one of the people I work with, like, this is idiotic. Mm. Like, just be around this guy every day. Like, that guy loves to win. And I've seen him, he's sitting there with his feet in the ice bucket after every game that we lose, and he looks despondent. Like, this guy's competitive. I know that for a fact. And, you know, I'm glad he's on our team, and I really wish the guy would have said his name. We would have known who we could beat for a while.
Well, just pretend it's the assistant coach on each of these teams on the West Coast trip.
Whatever team we play next.
Phoenix.
That's right.
Absolutely. Against Phoenix would be nice. Well, I mean, listen, the one thing you can say about Tatum is that even when he hasn't been scoring, he's been finding other ways to contribute, and that's been great, whether it's defensively and, as we said, the assists and the rebounds. And that's, I think that, you know this. Celtics fans just want you to play your ass off. And if you're slumping somewhere else, make up for it in another place. And that's at least one thing you can say about Jason Tatum is in that aspect, he's been good.
Yeah, and our whole team needs to embrace that all the time. And I think that that's one of the things that we talked about at the beginning of the year was getting back to being a team that Boston really rallied around because it plays together and plays hard as hell. And I think that, hey, we were not consistent early on in doing that, and since we've committed to the defensive end, we certainly haven't been perfect, and we've had our fair share of duds, but we have, been pretty consistent in that effort part, and the defensive end has given us a shot. Now, again, I'm really looking forward to the next couple of weeks. When you start talking about the Utah-Portland back-to-back, the L.A. back-to-back, at Phoenix, come back, play Milwaukee, Golden State, New York, Philly, like on down the line, Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Christmas. It never stops. This is a heck of a stretch coming up, and we're going to learn even more about ourselves through this stretch.
All right. Well, Brad Stevens, good stuff. Good luck on this stretch, and we look forward to talking to you.
Be well, guys. See you.
Right, take it easy. Man. There you go. Brad Stevens.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.